Welcome to the Fix Podcast here on thesportsvirus.com featuring pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. I'm your host, Joe Castellano, also the host of the San Francisco Giants Inside China Basin Podcast and the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast. The Fix is your bi-weekly show focusing on pitching mechanics, injury prevention, and peak performance on the mound. Angel Borelli has a master's degree in sports science and has been a strength and conditioning coach for 35 years. For the past 20 years, she's worked specifically on investigating pitching deliveries. Pitchers from Little League on up to the big leagues seek out Angel for solutions that will help take them to the next level. She also works with pitchers who are recovering from injuries by giving them customized training programs that will get them back on the mound. And she finds and corrects the flaws that led to the injury in the first place. Education, solutions, and troubleshooting here on the Fix Podcast, also available on the iTunes podcast app. It's been a great season for pitching. Joe Castellano here with Angel Borelli as we talk to you every couple of weeks. And we've had some no-hitters, Angel, this year that have been fun to watch. Chris Heston of the Giants locally here, that was a great one in New York. But Max Scherzer had a no-hitter for the Washington Nationals. And just recently, this weekend on Sunday, Cole Hamels throws a no-hitter against the Cubs for the Philadelphia Phillies. It was a little scary there at the end with that catch in center field as the center fielder was falling down in the dirt. But he got the no-hitter, and who knows, as we're doing this podcast, he could be getting traded right now. But with all these no-hitters, pitchers many times will say they're not thinking about it. But in the late innings, they're definitely thinking about it, and they want it. When you get that close to history, you've got to really strive for it, you would think. And it's fun to watch them finish it off, even if you're not a fan of that team. So, Angel, tell us a little bit about what goes on in the mind of these pitchers as they go through a no-hitter, really, at any level.
Well, I think this is a great example of having control over your mind that all of us as humans need at all different times of our lives. And, of course, I have a lot of pitchers that throw no-hitters, and I ask them all the time, I want to investigate what goes on with them. And, plus, before I started doing kinesiology, I was actually thought I was going to be a sports psychologist. And I was amazed at really and truly the effect that the mental state has on performance. And I think anybody who performs knows that you can have your skill down, you can be great, but if in the moment you have to be clutch, you have to be able to control your mind, because the performance is 90-some% mental. We might even say 95% mental, because you could have the best fastball, you could have great location, but if you get nervous or somebody gets in your head, you're not going to be able to reveal or to let that skill surface. So I think the thing about this is, and you brought up an interesting point, so we know that, and actually I think the baseball kind of already knows this. I think I've heard pitchers say that when they're throwing a no-hitter, the whole bench on the inside gets quiet. Right. He walks in the dugout. Nobody says a word. It's like, and what they're doing intuitively is they're trying to minimize the sensory input to this guy. In other words, let's not get him talking about it, excited. They're not saying this, but this is what they're doing. Intuitively, they're leaving the space alone. They're keeping it sacred. And the pitcher himself, who is able to throw a no-hitter, this is a guy who has command over his thinking. So most of the guys who are throwing no-hitters, some of them tell me they didn't even know it until the fourth or fifth inning. They just, all of a sudden it's like, wow. Now, they're human beings, and like you said, in the late innings, they must think about it. It's not that we're trying. There's no way an athlete or a human can be so perfect that he finds a way to absolutely not let a certain thought cross his mind. But it's your ability to recognize the thought and then to let it go. Because what happens with being able to repeat a performance, and this is really what we're saying, if a guy keeps throwing strikes, or he keeps throwing with locating a pitch that a hitter can't hit. And this is a guy who's a hitter is as good at what he does as the pitcher is. What he's doing is repeating solid performances. The ability to repeat a performance, to let your body emerge, all the skill you've practiced, that's in there. The ability to let it emerge is for you not to interfere with it. So it's not so much what you do, it's what you don't do. So by not interfering with it, with thought, and the way thought interferes, thoughts come across our mind, but you absolutely have to let it go. And then you have to be about only what you're doing in that moment. You lose power and you lose your skill if you're thinking about the outcome of your skill. You cannot say, I'm going to do this, and then just be thinking about it. You can have the intent of throwing a strike, but then you have to shift right back to what you're doing in that moment with that pitch. You can't go, I want to throw that strike, because then this guy won't get on base, and then this will happen here. You can't be going into a story. So the ability to flag your thoughts, if they come in, get rid of them, and then be just about the physicality of what you're doing in that moment. That's the skill. And believe me, it is hard. That's why I have the greatest respect for athletes. But the ones that are throwing no-hitters, they have command over their brain and not just their body. And that's, I think, something that needs to be, people need to think about and be aware of that. And the truth is, even to win a game, and to be a good pitcher or to be good at, you know, golf. I know you're a golfer.
Yeah.
It's really your ability to eliminate things that are going on around you and eliminate your own head from getting in the way. And your own, you can't be ahead. In your head, there aren't three bases. There aren't three bases. You're not running around. In your head, there's one pitch. And that's all you're thinking about. And it's not about the outcome. It's about what you're doing in that moment. And that is a skill that I think is the important one. And all great athletes know that. And they call it being in the zone. And the zone is this emptiness. It's like a nothing's in there kind of place. And that's what pitchers who do that will tell you. And golfers, and maybe you've been in it when you've ever had a great day on the course. So that's what I think is going on. And I think it's a fantastic thing to see.
Yeah, and it's devastating when a guy has a no-hitter and it's broken up. I remember a pitcher named Dave Steeb. Many of our listeners may remember him back in the 80s. He had no-hitters broken up in consecutive home starts with two outs in the ninth inning. I mean, and then he threw a no-hitter a couple of years later. But you can only imagine how that feels. And, you know, you think about Heston, he had a perfect game going, but he hit three batters. And Max Scherzer had a perfect game going and hit a batter with two outs in the ninth inning and settled for the no-hitter. So it really is strange how these things happen, because you're going to need some luck. And I can only imagine how mentally it would affect you if you don't get it.
Yeah, and I also think they're not trying, quote-unquote, to throw no-hitters. Think about this. If somebody almost throws a no-hitter, but he doesn't, he, let's say, gives up a hit, has he not thrown a great game?
Yeah.
And if you don't see, the smaller picture, which is, wow, I just threw a great game and I won, but if you give it a different label, like, well, geez, you failed at a no-hitter, it changes the whole dynamic. Pitchers are the last one that are really thinking about this. I think the no-hitter causes more stress in the people watching it than it does in the pitcher himself. And his job becomes double when he has to, like, ignore the tension of his teammates who are like, oh, boy, here we go. And I have had pitchers tell me they didn't even know they were throwing one until well into the game. So it's interesting.
Now, Angel had more analysis of Chris Heston on the Inside China Basin Giants podcast. Let's listen in. You were watching Chris Heston as he beat the Brewers on Monday, and it wasn't a dominating performance for him. And in fact, you know, the last couple of outings, he had to throw a lot of pitches to get through the seven innings, and he wasn't a big strikeout pitcher or anything, but he got the win. He's 11-5 now with a 3.14 ERA. Certainly a rookie of the year candidate when you look at what he's doing. What did you see in him that you liked, and what do you think maybe he could even improve on as he goes along?
Well, what I loved about him is he's got a very straight line to the plate. And in the first inning, I think that they showed some views from different sides. So if anybody wants to go back and take a look at it. But, you know, there's always this argument in pitching. And actually, it's not an argument. Kinesiologists don't argue about it. But pitching coaches, many of them teach, when you're at the top of your knee lift, you should twist your body. So for a right-handed pitcher, he'd be taking at the top of his knee lift, his knee, and he'd be twisting it towards the outfield. So, and I think the words they use is like, show your back pocket to the hitter. And there's this twisting that goes on, and which is called counter rotation. And then you counter rotate back to come to the straight line, and then you go down the hill. And this is like a totally crazy concept if you're a kinesiologist, because it just doesn't line the muscles up correctly. It's really odd, but it's something that historically has been taught. what he demonstrates is the perfect way to be on the top of your knee lift. And this is something, this is when I would like kids to take a look at this. I think it's important for them once in a while to see somebody who doesn't have bells and whistles, but still gets the job done. And what this allows him to do, and this is why he's got a great upside. He's not even 80% of his potential right now.
Wow.
And the fact that he mentally has it, but he is at the top of that knee lift and he's straight. His shoulders and hips are lined up with the path he's going to take. He strides. His arm, his pitching arm, is in the correct place when his foot touches down. And he rotates in a very, very sequenced way. And he has very nice arm action. And so that's what I like about him. He's got a straight line. He's nice and clean. And when you're clean like that, you have tons of upside. If you're not clean, you're going to find a ceiling to your performance. So that's what I love about him.
It's amazing the movement he's getting on this two-seam fastball. In fact, Buster Posey was our guest on the Monday Inside China Basin podcast, and we talked about maybe falling in love with putting down the sign for the two-seam fastball, but he can't do that. He's still got to mix it up against these great hitters. But that movement that he's getting, it really is remarkable.
Yeah, and actually, I think that I think I know why he gets such great movement, and it's also part of but the cause of it may be something that I think is a place where he's leaving miles per hour on the mound, which is one thing we don't want to see. And I know he's not blasting guys away with his fastball, but here's what he's doing. He's got an error. If you notice, he's got this really clean style, and the end of his motion is bumpy. I always look at a pitcher's follow through. It tells me a lot about the kind of command he has with his body. He can't just command his pitches. He has to command his body. And if your follow-through is really funky or you're falling all over the place or something doesn't look right, you've got to take a look at what caused that. And he's got a little funny follow-through. And when I analyzed to see what he was doing, he's got an issue with his glove arm where he stops his glove arm at his body. It actually looks like it's stuck there. And again, in the first inning, they did a view from behind the catcher. And you can see his glove arm is in way too soon. It actually blocks his rotation. And it actually causes him to have to twist a little bit to the left because his glove arm is stuck in front of his left chest muscle. And it's like blocking full rotation. So his hand actually kind of cuts over a little bit to the left. And my guess is that's what's giving him some movement. Now, would he lose that if he corrected this? Probably not, but he would have more miles per hour on his forcing, plus the end of his motion wouldn't be so rough. We don't want to see a rough finish in the motion because that's where all the muscles are decelerating and that's where guys get injured. So he's doing with the motion he's got at the beginning. If he came to me and said, oh, and by the way, this problem would cause some location issues because he's not fully rotating square. If he came to me and said, I want to keep everything I've got that's great, but where can I make an improvement? That's exactly what the issue I would deal with.
And that was Angel talking about Chris Heston on the Inside China Basin Giants podcast, also here on thesportsvirus.com. Now, another Giants pitcher, Tim Lincecum, has not been on the mound lately. He's been on the DL. He got hit by a line drive on the forearm. But then we hear about this hip issue that he has, and he had to have a cortisone shot in each of his hips, and it kind of came out of nowhere for a lot of people in the media. Nobody really knew that he had this problem before, but tell us a little bit about how does that happen to Lincecum. You've watched him closely, so is this something that was a surprise to you as you watched it?
No, it actually wasn't a surprise, and actually it was a prediction I made some years back to myself, you know, because what I do with pitchers is I look to see where are their vulnerabilities. And, you know, I talked on our last show about stride length, and I've talked about this a lot, and I've written about it, stride length, stride length, stride length. And mostly I talk about it in terms of the fact that when your stride's too long, you know, it imparts problems for other parts of the motion. And one of the things I haven't talked about enough is what the body goes through when your stride is too long. It is just like if you walk, it's the way you feel when you're sliding downhill and you have to catch your balance because you're going downhill and your length of your stride changes. Just say you're walking down the street and there's a hill,
yeah,
or going down a weird step. Things like that can really stress the knee. They stress the ankle, which in fact then stress the hip. And your body weight is being transferred into the leg through the hip joints. So the hip joints are critical for receiving all the weight of the body. And the deal is if your stride's too long, there's a ball in your hip, just like in your shoulder. If your stride is too long, you've got rotation going on in the hip that it's not comfortable with, and the muscles around it that are protecting it become deficient, and then the inside of the joint becomes affected. Now, he has problems in his labrum, and people mostly associate labrum with the shoulder. The labrum is just cartilage. It's a very specialized type of cartilage that is in the shoulder, and it's in the hip. And once there's a problem with the labrum, you usually need surgery. And he has problems in both his hips and the labrum. Now, so the take-home message here is this is another issue of why we don't want the stride to be out of control for the length of your body. The length of your legs is the length of your legs. When you try to make it double that length, it's something's going to be affected. But the real take-home message for me in this that I want my listeners to hear, and this is what broke my heart. He said he had problems at the beginning of the season, but then when I dug further, he's actually had problems for the last few seasons. He's actually had problems for years with his hip. If you are having a problem in a part of your body, and you also have a style of motion that people have given names to, you know it's weird, it's quote-unquote freakish,
right.
You know that you're using that part of your body incorrectly, please know that I don't care what it's doing for you. If you have pain in an area of a body where you know you're using it in a strange way, you should not continue using it that way. And to be so attached to a certain incorrect movement because it's your identity or it's the way you think is the only way you can get the job done means you don't understand the body. Tim Lincecum has a lot of great qualities as a pitcher. Had he fixed that years ago when his body first started saying, hey, dude, your stride, it's insane, and we don't like it. That's what his hip joint was telling him, and he didn't pay attention, and he's so young. And if he kept on doing this, he could be in a wheelchair. Hip surgery is not fun. He will be in a wheelchair while he's rehabbing. So the deal is, when you have exotic mechanics and you think that's the only way you can get the job done, and then you start having pain in an area of your body that's associated with that, even though it doesn't keep you from pitching, please pay attention to that. Don't think there's only one way to get the job done. Your body's way smarter than that. And if you're a good pitcher, you'll be able to get it done because what makes you good is what's in your head, not necessarily what's in your body. And that, to me, is the real sad take-home message from this thing with Lincecum.
You know what I take out of this too, Angel, is that Lincecum was always the guy, and I think one of the reasons he was called the freak, in addition to the fact that he had an unusual delivery and threw hard for a guy who's not very big, was that he never even iced his arm. His arm was always healthy. And you wondered, wow, you know, with all the strange mechanics, how is he so healthy with his arm? But at the same time, here he gets this hip issue, which is something that you weren't thinking about as just the, you know, the layman. I'm watching him and saying, you know, he's healthy. His arm doesn't hurt. So that's got to be good. But in the meantime, there is a problem there.
Yeah, and I think what's really sad, and Major Leagues needs to get to this, there's people, not just me, it's not just people who analyze mechanics. Physical therapists who would be watching this would know that when you slam your knee backward because your stride's so long, you're going to blow out your knee, mm-hmm. or you're putting stress around the joint. There are many professions that understand correct movement mechanics, and somewhere teams have to start having somebody on board who we look at mechanics and we say, how vulnerable is he? And is this something we should change? It's sort of like if you give birth to a child and that child starts to walk and the feet are all turned in, you pretty much get him to an orthopedic surgeon pretty quickly to find out what's going on if he doesn't seem like it's normal. We can't just allow the boys to get on the mound and be freaks. When we have names for kids because of the way they look and then they grow up looking that way too, that should be a red flag that, hey, yes, he's getting that ball over the plate, but is this okay, and is this an okay way for him to do it? And I think we have to learn from these sorts of situations, and then Tim doesn't go to waste with the message and the ability to teach, and this is something I think that's important. And for parents, coaches, players, this is a way we learn.
Speaking of learning, now it's time to learn more about
Velocity.
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 And look at that. Triple digits. 101 on our gun.
And here on the Velocity segment, you know, we talked a little bit about Chris Heston earlier and what's going on with him. He's not a guy who's throwing 95 to 100 miles an hour, but, you know, it depends a lot on movement. But as you mentioned in the Giants segment, maybe Heston could get more velocity. It can never hurt a pitcher, right?
Exactly. Well, you know, on this segment, I've talked about the glove arm before, but I talk about how it works in the normal motion. And what I want everyone to get is the problem it causes when it doesn't behave normally. So our two arms kind of work together. And if you ever have tried to climb a rope, you notice that as you put one hand on the rope and you pull yourself down, the other side of your body naturally rotates forward. It's a push and pull kind of thing. So our shoulder girdle is working in that sort of way. When a pitcher reaches his glove arm out, as he pulls it in, that body is rotating towards the plate. It's actually assisting in the rotation of the pitching side to square up to the plate. Now, the way the arms work, it's sort of like doing a row. If you've ever been in a gym and you're holding onto a cable and you do a row, you have your hand in front, you pull the cable, and the elbow goes behind your body. And that's how you get a complete movement in that side of your shoulder joint. Well, the pitching motion is no different than any other motion. Both arms have to move freely. And the style that he's using, and you can see this if you look at the first inning and you'll see him from behind the catcher, you'll see that his glove comes in, and the glove itself, the real estate of the glove, is actually, if he had a shirt on with a pocket, the glove is actually stuck right there. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his pitching from the backside, from the outfield, you'll notice you don't even see his left elbow because the glove is so caught in front of him that the elbow is actually stuck to his side. So what that means is the left side of his body, as the right side was rotating, the left side of the body discontinued its rotation. When it discontinues it, the right side comes around only from its own energy. Now, is that a bad thing? Can it be done? Well, he's doing it and pitchers do it. So, yes, it can be done. Is it efficient? No. Does it cause problems with rotation? Yes. What does it mainly do? It mainly causes you to leave miles per hour on the mound instead of behind the ball, which is my pet peeve about people looking for velocity in unusual places. Just look within your motion. And what he's doing, and he's a great pitcher, and he's got everything else going for him, is that even though he's got his arm in the right place and he rotates beautifully, when he gets to the end of his motion becomes inefficient. So his glove arm is getting stuck in front of his body. So you should be able to see the elbow pulling behind the body as it would do normally in the gym if you were doing rows or any other sort of motion. The other thing it's doing is you'll notice when he pitches, and again, you can see this from the catcher view, as he goes into his follow through, he looks like a different pitcher. He looks like a pitcher who wasn't really in control. And it's because, and he falls to a certain side, he falls to his left side. It's because his left arm stopping in the front. It would be sort of like, imagine pitching while you're holding a bag of groceries in your left arm.
Right.
Up at top. That's what he's doing. So when he releases the ball, which way is he going to fall? Towards the bag of groceries.
Exactly.
So now he's also got a center of mass balance issue. So guys, when you're coaches, when you're looking at your pitchers and you're looking for things, make sure there is no part of the body that should stop in the middle of the motion. He's literally stopping the glove in the front of his body while everything else is still moving. It causes problems. He's losing miles per hour. Once again, don't go searching for velocity. Look for the velocity that you're losing because of something you're not doing correctly, and that's an incorrect way to use the arms. So that was the very, very interesting thing to see about him. That's why I say he is not even fully developed yet. He's going to be a great pitcher, and if he gets on top of this, he'll be even better.
You know, this really makes me think of the great Giants Hall of Fame pitcher, Juan Marichal, who they have a statue of him outside of AT&T Park, so you actually could check out, you know, him frozen in motion, and his left arm is almost by his, I think his shin, because he's reaching out so far. And I don't know if that's the perfect motion, but it's a lot different than what you just described.
Yeah, well, he had a completely crazy motion. And, from what I remember of him, when I was studying pitching in graduate school, everyone would bring him up to me and I'd say, what is this guy doing? So, one thing is for sure, you want a complete motion. You want both tires at the front of your car. You want them both rotating. You don't want the one on the left to stop while the one on the right keeps going, because you're not going to either one get there as fast, or two, something's going to go wrong. So you don't do that. And that is the importance of having both arms moving. So with Juan, as crazy as it was, at least both arms were free and nothing was stopping him. And that is the main thing. Don't stop yourself.
All right, Angel, look forward to talking to you again in a couple of weeks in the dog days of August.
Thanks, Joe.
That's pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions or comments, send an email to angel@jimscience.com. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Fix Podcast on thesportsvirus.com.